Hello. Hello, I'm Kendra.
And I'm August.
And you're listening to Book Dumb, the bookcast brought to you by a couple of dummies.
This week, we are so excited to share our top reads of 2021. So we have our five top favorites, as well as five honorable mentions. And I'm sure other books will come up as we talk because, damn, this was hard to narrow it down. I was telling Kendra earlier on my original list, I had 23 books listed out. So narrowing this down to 10 was a challenge.
I totally agree. It was really hard to choose. And I'm sure there's going to be a book like later today I'm going to think of and be like, fuck, I should have put that on the list. But it is what it is, folks.
Yep. And also we have 8 days left in the year. So hopefully we don't read anything, or maybe we will read something that's absolutely spectacular and should be on this list, but it's too late. Recording's done.
I know. I was actually thinking about that because I finished a book last night and then I was kind of like, oh, what do I want to read next? And I was like, you got to choose something you don't think you're going to absolutely love, because then I can't put it on the next year's favorite list. It's a tragedy. It really is.
Yeah. It's hard. I'm just like, trying to get through books, selectively picking out ones that I know I'm going to like a lot, but maybe they're not going to change my life completely.
Yeah, which is hard to do because you never know. Like, books can surprise you.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think we'll see that with some of our picks for this year. But before we jump into it, I'm dying to know, what are you reading right now?
I'm technically not reading anything. I finished a book last night at midnight, which is Comfort Me with Apples by Catherine Emma Valente. It's her newest book, super short. I read it in one sitting. It's about 100 pages. So highly, highly recommend if you're trying to like sneak in one more book before the end of the year. So fucking good. She wrote Deathless, which is one of my favorite books. And this is a really dark, all of her stuff is a little dark. She's known for dark fairy tales, but this is a thriller. You're trying to unpack where they are, what's happening, who her husband is. And I think it's something you need to go on knowing absolutely nothing about, because I like had no idea what was happening until the last like 5 pages when I figured it out. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Ooh, okay. Well, Deathless is for sure on my to read list for next year, because you've been telling me about that one for so long, but that sounds really cool. I'm glad that was enjoyable for you.
Honestly, August, I think you would love Comfort Me with Apples way more than Deathless.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Should I read that one first then?
I mean, both are fantastic. I think both are 5 stars. But I just personally think you would prefer Comfort Me with Apples. It has a lot of your vibes.
Okay, that's fair. Okay. Something to read in 2022, which still does not feel like a real year.
It's not.
It's not a real year. Time has no meaning. I am currently reading another David Sedaris book. I think this is the 7th David Sedaris book I've read this year. So I did not include any of his books on my list, but I could have, because this man has brought me so much joy. And I am currently listening to him read A Carnival of Snackery, which is his newest book. And it's his diaries from, I believe, 1992 to 2020. They're really fun so far. I've had a lot of laughs. It's also the longest of his books that I've ever read, and I'm really enjoying it.
This is the year of David Sedaris for you.
Oh, definitely.
7 is insane. I love that for you.
He has brought me so much joy, and I can't wait to listen to more of his books in 2022, because I'm sure that I will.
What a prolific writer. The fact that you've read 7 of his books and like you still have more to read, that's insane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I still have like his early diaries, and I've only read his nonfiction. I've never read any of his fiction, so have to jump on that too.
Love that.
So it's now time for our 2021 favorites. Are you ready for this, Kendra?
Honestly, no. I feel like I'm already feeling regret about my picks.
Yeah, I just know that there's so many that I've left out, and I'm just going to like realize it as soon as we finish recording. I'll just cry.
These are just a lot of great books, and there are a lot more great books out there in the world.
Yes, very, very true. So we're going to open with our honorable mentions. I'm just going to let everyone know this is a spoiler-free episode, so no spoilers for any of these books. We're going to try our hardest to hold each other to that. So do you want to share with me your first honorable mention?
Yes. A great book I read this year, Practical Magic by Alice Hoffman. It's, what else can I say about it?
Tenet. I knew this was going to be on your list.
It's so great. Great movie, great book. Highly recommend. What is your first honorable mention?
My first honorable mention is Night Bitch by Rachel Yoder. This could have been in my top five. I loved this book. I love the cover for this book. I think it's so strange, and I'm definitely going to read it again. This is a good one to go into knowing absolutely nothing, but it, or just a general bio about it, is it's about a mother facing motherhood with her very, very extra two-year-old child.
I am shocked this was going to be my guess for your number one. So,
oh, well,
I'm glad we waited to do that, because I would have been wrong.
Oh yeah, we'll be guessing each other's number one choice right before we announce it. So
yeah, what a great book.
Yours is going to be. I think I have an idea for yours, but we'll see.
We will see. Okay, my number two is Howl's Moving Castle.
I thought was going to be your number one, like, convinced. Wow.
I was surprised. I surprised myself too. So like, my method for this is I just listed out as many books as I could remember that I absolutely loved that felt like the book of the year at the moment. And as I was like eliminating choices into the big list, Howl's Moving Castle just didn't make it. And I still think it's a perfect book. I know there's some dissent about that, and that's okay. But it's so fucking good. It just didn't feel like soul shifting in the way that my top five did.
Okay. I think that's fair, but I'm still very shocked. I think we're going to surprise each other with our list, because I think our thought process for making our list was very different. Mine's all on vibes. Just no explanation. Just, oh, made me feel that way. Okay. That's love why. That. Do you want to know my second honorable mention?
I'm truly, truly dying to know. Like, I have no idea.
It's Know My Name by Chanel Miller. Oh. This also could have been in my top five. A very powerful memoir. Chanel Miller is such a talent, and I'm going to read anything else that she writes, and I'm excited for it. This was a really heavy memoir, which is one of the reasons why it's not in my top five, just because it's not one that I feel like you can recommend to everybody, but it is a very powerful memoir, and I think it's one that a lot of people could benefit from reading.
I 100% agree. It is not in my list, and it was really hard. It wasn't in the original, like, big list. It's such a good book. It's such a good book. Very moving.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I included it here, other than just like it being so powerful and so great as it is I read a lot of memoirs this year, and I feel like this is one of the memoirs that kind of kicked off me reading so many. So happy about that.
That makes sense. All right, you ready for my number three honorable mention? Paradise Rot by Jenny Haval. Also another one that could have made the top five. I think one reason it didn't is it, again, isn't just like it didn't change me in a way that I felt other books did. Really great, really fucking weird book. Please don't read it if you don't like bodily fluid being exchanged. If you don't like overtly sexual books, this is not going to be a book for you. I think it's a perfect book. I love the comparisons to Eden, and it just reminded me of Paradise Lost, which everyone knows is like my nerd obsession. It's just great. A lot of pissing. I'll be honest. There's a lot of pee in it. So if that makes you uncomfortable, maybe don't read it. But if you can get past that, it's a really good read.
Well, I am not afraid of reading about any bodily fluids or anything gross. So I want to read that one so badly. I'm kind of surprised I haven't read it yet. And wow, she's beauty. She's grace. Kendra's showing me her cat Zelda asleep on her notes. Beautiful, as it should be. Okay. So my next honorable mention, are you ready? One that could have easily been in my top five, could have easily been my number one, but it's not, for who knows why. There's no rhyme or reason here. And that's Morris by E.M. Forster. One August. That I'm obsessed with.
Another one. That was going to be my guess. What the fuck? Literally, what the fuck?
I am obsessed with this book. I'm also obsessed with this film. That's another reason why it's not my number one here, and it's why it's an honorable mention, is I feel like I'm mixing up my intense love for the movie with also my love for the book. This is one book where I'm glad that I've read it, but I think I might love the film more, and I think I'm going to return to the film more, because that queer longing and hand touching, what's better to see? I don't know. I also just bought like Morris pins for my roommate and I, and it's Clive and Morris like leaning on each other in one of the early scenes. And then I also have a Morris sweatshirt coming my way that my partner got me. So I'm very Morris focused and I'm obsessed with it. And I think everyone should read it and everyone should watch it.
I am floored. Okay.
I love it so much. It's so good. All of these books are so fucking good. And that's why this was so hard.
This, I think this is the perfect representation of how difficult it is to choose a favorite book for the year, because I would have bet a kidney, honestly, that this was going to be your favorite book.
Me with you for House Moving Castle. So good thing we didn't bet any organs on this.
Next time for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
What's your next?
Next one is a very recent read, and I surprised myself by putting it on this list, and that's Once There Were Wolves by Charlotte McConaghy. I just talked about this in our previous recording. So it's one I did as a buddy read with Jess from Jess Decker Reads on Instagram. Please go give her a follow. She's brilliant. And I think the reason it ended up on this list is there. I do have like some minor criticisms of it. It's like a 4 out of 5, where everything else here is on a 5 out of 5. But the reason it's highlighted in the top 10 is it genuinely has like changed my thinking about my relationship to nature. And I always thought like I had a good relationship to nature. I'm very nature oriented, but this just like, it just, I think it, rather than change my thinking or like shifted thinking, it stirred something that was dormant in me. And I think that's really important for a novel to do. And it just felt like it had a bigger purpose other than a fantastic story. And I like went back and I read the acknowledgments, and she acknowledges organizations throughout the world that are like fighting to reforest and rewild parts of the world. And I felt like that was an important acknowledgement to make. It was really good. I would really recommend it. I don't know how I'll feel a month from now. I'm still in the honeymoon phase of finishing the book, but it was really great.
That sounds so good. Wow. Just knocking it out of the park. Sounds fantastic. Really want to read that. And I'm glad that it's had such an impact on you. It's nice to hear. Okay. Are you ready for my next honorable mention? It is The Awakening by Kate Chopin. A 5 out of 5. This had been on my to read list for way too long. And I finally read it this year. We did a whole episode on it. So feel free to go check that out. There's a spoiler-free section to that episode as well as a spoiler-filled. I really loved this one. I think maybe one of the reasons why I didn't make my top 5 is because it was so sad. And I love sadness, but this one just, you know, it's heartbreaking. So it's about a young woman in the late 1800s, I believe it's late Victorian, early Edwardian period. And she's struggling with her identity just as a living person and trying to find her place in the world. And this world is one that's filled with misogyny and sexism, but she's also in a little bit of a better place because she's incredibly wealthy. So just getting into those dynamics, and I'd recommend it. It's great, but again, very sad.
Totally agree. I knew this was going to show up on your list somewhere. It's a great, great little novella. Mm-hmm. Okay. My last honorable mention is nonfiction, and it's The Shock. Little Weirds by Jenny Slate, which I love.
I knew this was going to come on your list. I thought this was going to be in your top 5 too.
It was so close. When I get into my top 5, you'll see like which one it like would barely beat it. But truly, I think a lot of these books, in my heart, they're in my top 5, but there's only 5 spots. This is a really great memoir. I've talked about this one a lot. So if you listen to the podcast pretty consistently, you're probably sick of hearing it. But just in case this is your first episode, you're starting with our top 5 of 2021. Little Weirds is Jenny Slate, the comedian / actress's memoir. And it's really just about how she perceives her life. And it's like post-divorce. So it's like her moving through the grief of a relationship that she really valued, but understanding that it's over, as well as just like general little stories from her life. It's really funny. It's really heartwarming. And I always describe it as whimsical because the way she views this world is childlike, but not in a naive state, but in like a state of wonder and optimism. And I think it's just, if you want an uplifting memoir, this is a good one. There's really no heaviness in it that I can remember. There's no trigger warnings that I can remember. But I mean, other than just like general sadness sometimes. But it just was really moving to me as well as insightful.
I still really need to read that one. I think that's going to be a memoir that I read in 2022, just to continue the love of memoirs.
I've heard the audiobook is really good for that one because she reads it. So
I would... Oh, I'm sure. I love it when memoirs are read by their authors.
Yeah, me too.
It's just my favorite thing. And she's also so fucking funny. Love her. Can I give a movie rec that she's in that I think she's just superb in?
Yes, please.
Polka King.
Ooh, I haven't seen
it. Which also has Jack Black in it. It's about Jan Levon, the Polka King. True crime story, actually happened. Really fun stuff. Would recommend. Okay, so my last honorable mention is one that I read very early on this year, and it's one that I feel like I've consistently talked about. And that's part of the reason why it's an honorable mention, and that's Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng. Just a solid one. I read this after listening to Little Fires Everywhere, which is also by Celeste Ng. And I just love her writing. I'm going to continue reading her books. I think they're very fun and very just well-written. Everything I Never Told You centers on a family in Shaker Heights, Ohio, I believe. Again, it's been a minute since I've read this. And they're dealing with the loss of their daughter, who at the beginning of the novel is found floating dead in a local lake, I believe. So it's about dealing with that trauma, facing that trauma, as well as looking back on the family's history and their past and why they are as they are. And it's just a really beautiful family-centered novel. I recommend it.
Fantastic book, I've heard. I need to read it. I know. Every time we talk, I know I say I need to read it.
I feel like that's every conversation we have. It's just like each of us bringing up a book and being like, God damn, I need to get to that one.
So many books to read. Not enough time in the world.
No. If only we could stop time to just read books, but
yeah,
truly. Not yet.
Are you ready? I think we're putting it off. We're like, let's chit-chat more so we don't have to choose.
I've already rearranged my order of my top five while we've been talking.
While we've been talking?
Yeah. So there's that.
Interesting.
These lists are subject to change.
I'm very excited to hear like which has shifted for you.
Okay. Yeah, it's my top one and two have shifted.
Damn it. Do I need to shift? Nope. You know what? I'm going off instinct. If I decide to shift it last minute, that's what I'll do. If not, this is it.
Yeah, follow your heart. Okay, so tell me, what's your number five favorite book of the year?
It's one I read with you. And it is Passing by Nella Larsen. This is my first.
I knew this was going to be on your list. I knew really? It. I knew it. Yeah.
I know. I am so excited. I loved this book so much. So Passing is a novel that's set in Harlem, which is a neighborhood in New York. I don't know. I feel like that's common knowledge, but if not, no shame if you're not from America. Harlem is a neighborhood in New York, and it's in the 1920s. And it centers on two childhood friends, Claire and Irene, who kind of run into each other and catch up, and they become equally fascinated with each other. That's all I'll say, because there's some stuff there that August and I agree on, but maybe other people don't pick up on. I don't know. I think it's there. Fascination is a PG way of putting it. Both women are light-skinned. They're light-skinned Black women. And so one chooses to pass and the other chooses not to. And so it really shows how very different their lives are. If you've read The Vanishing Half, a lot of people say that this is a companion novel, or this was the precedent for that novel. And it really shows the way like race works as a social construct and the way we participate in giving meaning to it throughout our day-to-day lives. So, but it's also as The Vanishing Half, it's about so much more than race. I think that's reductive to just hold it to that. It's also about hypocrisy and fear, betrayal, secrecy, like our relationships to partners, how much they actually know us, as well as some queer undertones. So that's a little nugget for you. Fantastic, fantastic novella. I think everyone should read this in their life. We briefly mention it, or not briefly, we talk about it in the Vanishing Half episode, where we get into themes and more of like, we get into spoilers for that one, particularly the ending I love to talk about. But I think this should be required reading. I think August always disagrees with this. I think instead of The Great Gatsby, this is what we should be teaching in high school. August literally put her hand up.
I don't disagree with that. I think Passing should be taught in schools. And I think Nella Larsen is just like such an amazing author, so she deserves to be studied and recognized just as much as other authors from that time period. I think they should be taught together. I think they're very important. Both,
yeah,
just great books. Yeah,
I could see, like, if there's time in the syllabus to teach them together, oh my god, amazing, because of the way they, like, I think there's a lot of dialogue between the two. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, the theory that there are passing characters in Great Gatsby would be a great way, like, yeah, using passing to have that conversation would be a really good teaching method.
And I think it would also be great to talk about, like, different forms of passing, because, like, in Great Gatsby, there's a really popular reading that Nick Carraway is a queer character. So, like, reading, yeah, him as, like, a straight passing individual at that time period versus, you know, like, in passing, you know, passing for white when they're African-American.
Yeah.
Just interesting conversations that could be had.
Definitely. And if there's time for a third one, add Vanishing Half in there, which has multiple layers of passing, yes, as well.
It brings it all together in a perfect way.
I totally agree. Okay, enough of my ranting about that perfect book. Mm-hmm. What is your number five pick?
My number five. So I had to include some memoirs here because I feel like this was the year for memoirs and then also contemporary fiction for me. So trying to divide it up. And I read a lot of great memoirs this year, so this was really hard. Again, could not include any of the David Sedaris because I just love them all. So my number five is Crying in H Mart by Michelle Zahner. This was one that Kendra and I both just absolutely loved. I feel like it's one that we're always talking about. And I don't know, I just, when going over the books that I read this year, I feel like this was one, not all the memoirs I read were very compelling and very engaging. So not to say that one is better than the other, but this is one that I feel like has really stuck with me. Also because it made me start listening to the band Japanese Breakfast, which I'm grateful for. I'm really enjoying listening to them. And then also I just found out today that they're making this into a movie. So had to include it to bring this up. And Japanese Breakfast is doing the score for it. And Michelle is writing the screenplay as well. So just great to see, really excited to get into that and to see that. Just some background on Crying in H Mart. This is a memoir by Michelle Zahner of Japanese Breakfast. She's their guitarist and songwriter, and I believe just like primary member. She does a lot of the production and everything. And this is a story, her story about the loss of her mother and then also her feeling of loss of cultural identity to her Korean heritage and getting into that. And I feel like it's just explored in such a beautiful way. And I feel like her use of like food as like a way to relate to culture is like a very universal thing that a lot of people can connect with. And this book just made me want to like call my mom and like go get a nice meal. And, you know, I don't know. It was really good and I really like it. And I'm going to reread it without a question.
Totally agree. I love this book too. I agree with everything you said. It made me want to hug my mom. It's just beautiful. It's crazy that one individual could be so talented.
Yeah, I think that's also another reason why I included it on here, because this is the first year in a while where so far I have not reread Patti Smith's Just Kids. And so I needed a good musician memoir here. I probably will be reading Just Kids in the next 8 days. But I just needed like some, you know, music references, like talking about that production process as well as, you know, personal trauma. It's just what I like. So
that's fair. I just love that you're like, there cannot be a year where I don't reread Just Kids. So I'm making it happen this week.
I mean, I gotta. Listening to Pat, I'll probably listen to it. What's better than listening to Patty? Cozy. So I also just got one of her books from the library. So maybe I'll start 2022 with that. We'll see.
Oh, end 2021 with Patty. Start 2022 with Patty. That seems very you.
Better way. But I also have a book that I really want to start this year with, and I think you know which one it is, but we won't get into that. Do you want to tell me what your next pick is?
I would love to. It's a memoir as well. In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado.
Yes.
Oh my God. We love Machado so much. Her short stories are some of my favorite. I teach them. I just am obsessed with them. In the Dream House is one of my favorite memoirs I've ever read. So again, if I haven't made this clear, this is a memoir. Machado portrays the abuse that she endured from an ex. And she does it with like, not just like wisdom and like, just like a prowess for storytelling, but she also does it with humor, which I know is probably difficult for her to do at the time and can be difficult to read if you're not quite there yet. So definitely trigger warning for all forms of abuse, intimate partner violence, as well as like assault, sexual assault. So it is terrifying. And the way she portrays it, though, is, to, I thought, very palatable, despite how heavy the topic was. So she uses the conventions of traditional storytelling and not storytelling. She uses the conventions of traditional fairy tales and horror tropes. One I'm thinking is like hiding in the bathroom while someone's trying to break down a door. That like stands out to me, as well as she does this thing where she footnotes her memoir to be like, this is a fairy tale trope of like, you don't like, don't take any food from an old lady, like something. And it's just really interesting because it's well researched, but it's her life, like she's researching her life. And then another thing that's really important that she does is she creates a record of abuse that happening in specifically femme identifying same-sex relationships where there previously wasn't one. So a big part of her book is saying that she didn't feel safe to come forward to talk about what was happening to her because women often are not allowed to be seen as perpetrators of violence because they're reduced to victims of violence. And that leaves no space for women, as well as like femme identifying people, to come forward about the abuse they suffer from people of the same gender. And it's just really interesting. She even like does research into like court cases that women who came forward against their partners who are women, and like being not believed, being even openly mocked because it's like, how could a woman do this? And it's like, people are evil regardless of gender. Like that just happens. So it's just really interesting. It's just really brilliant. I couldn't put it down. It's a very quick read. And despite how heavy it is, I really do think it feels light at times because of the way she presents it.
So do you want to hear something absolutely wild?
Of always, yes.
This is my next pick too.
I was gonna scream, but I was like, we are recording. I can't scream into a mic. Oh my God.
Yeah, for like exactly what you're saying. And I'm thinking like what you're saying, like it being maybe more digestible, even though like the content is so heavy, it's because like every single chapter has that narrative shift or like that different narrative tone or use of tropes throughout. And I feel like that changing of it, even though like at times it's very, very difficult to read or to listen to. I listened to it. And I loved the memoir experience or the audiobook. I loved the audiobook experience for this memoir. I also really liked the audiobook experience for her short story collection, Her Body and Other Parties. So would recommend that. But yeah, just that shift of those shifts of tropes and just narrative style throughout each different chapter, I feel like is enough of like a break or a shift where it's like, oh, okay. Like I'm out of that, but I'm still in that. It's different. So I have to like become accustomed to it, which makes it, I don't know, a little bit more digestible at times. I don't know. It was a really difficult read though, like content wise.
Totally. And she also uses second person, which is one of my favorite narrative techniques because she's talking. It's like herself before and after the abuse is talking to the person who she was during the abuse, and that I felt was very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. We just love Machado here. Big, big fans.
I love that. So is that your number four?
Yeah, that was my number four.
Wow. I wish I could say we might have more overlap, but that's not possible unless you've been secretly reading stuff.
There's no way my remaining three that you would even remotely like, I would say. So
sounds about right.
Okay. Yep. So do you want to share with me your number three pick, please?
Yes. My next one is Dear Centurion, another memoir. It's called Dear Centurion, A Black Spirit Memoir by Akwaeke Emezi. I love memoirs now. And this one might be my favorite one at the moment, which is really fucking hard to say. And I say that lightly because that could change tomorrow. But this is a memoir constructed as letters to various people in their life, including actually people that they've never met. Like there's one to Toni Morrison, there's one to celebrities they admire, just like people they feel influence them as well, like personally as well as professionally. And each of these letters when it's addressed to this person, it centers around a moment in their life related to the addressee. So either the first time they found Toni Morrison's writing, or a person who hurt them really badly, or a person who didn't believe them about their experience, or a person who helped them through a tough time. And it still reads like a story, like a cohesive story, even though each letter is to a different person. And a lot of these letters are personal, but there's also this like political atmosphere as well. And I couldn't really find the words to describe it, so I pulled an NPR quote just as to give credit to this. This is a quote from NPR about this in the book review, which this book creates a backdrop of cultural violence in Nigeria that was a regular part of young Amezi's life. So, end of quote. So there's like burnings of mosques, there's massacres of Muslims and Northerners, as well as a lot of violence towards queer folk, trans folk, non-binary folk, and that there had been state-sanctioned killings that like the governor allowed, because like there were riots and massacres happening of the Igbos, which are the culture that Amezi is a part of and descendant of, and just really scary stuff that was happening in their life that was ever present, but also kind of like muted because it was ever present. So it's not like super, I mean, there are moments where it's super obvious in the memoir, but it's not the center of the memoir. It's just like what's happening in their life continuously. And there's so much there. There's also, so Amezi is non-binary. And so it talks about that relationship to their body and what they go through when they try to get gender confirming surgery. So basically they wanted to get a breast augmentation and a few other things, but because there was no medical reason, I say medical in quotations, they were treated as insane. So they had to get multiple like examinations, psychological examinations, in order to get gender confirming surgery, which I know is the reality for a lot of trans folks, a lot of non-binary folks as well. It's just horrible that they are not believed in that way. And there's also a lot of spiritualism. So Amezi has a deep belief that they are greater than their body. They are a powerful entity. They are God. There's a word for it in Igbo. Let's see if I wrote it down. I think it's Ogbanji. Ogbanji. Forgive me for that pronunciation. It's an Igbo spirit that's been born to a human mother and is a kind of trickster and dies unexpectedly only to return in the next child and live over and over again. So they have this deep connection to Igbo culture, Igbo spiritualism, and that's one of the reasons that's one of the reasons they identify as non-binary, because they're like, my spirit spirit transcends gender, and that's why I'm so powerful. And I just, it's so good. Read it, please.
I knew that some Amezi was going to come up on your list, and I'm so happy that they did. I need to read that. I need to read like everything by them in 2022. That's the goal. That Freshwater, Death of Vivek, get them all in there.
Should, definitely.
Yeah, that sounds spectacular. Like, wow, really, really want to read, like, no words, just blown away.
Big mood. But I'm dying to know, what is your number three?
Not similar at all. This is by a piece of shit person. So putting that out there first, do you want to guess what it is just based off of that?
Is it American Psycho?
It is American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis. Ugh, gross man, not a fan, big Trumper. If you want to do some research into why he's trash, just Google him and you'll see. Don't listen to his podcast. Don't support him in any way if you can. And if you agree with him, I would recommend doing some research and maybe being educated. Educated on social issues, that's important. Don't be like this piece of shit man. Okay, so American Psycho is a great book, despite it being written by a garbage person. And it follows the life and interactions of Patrick Bateman, who is a piece of shit person, not just because he works on Wall Street, but also because he is quite possibly an awful, abusive predator. But we are not entirely sure, because there's the possibility that this could all be in his head, and that's apparent from the very beginning. I really liked this book. I read another book by Bret Easton Ellis this year that I also really enjoyed, called Less Than Zero. Just a big fan of long sentences, which he makes use of throughout. There's sometimes sentences that are multiple pages long, which, I mean, Molly Bloom reminiscent, you know, Ulysses reminiscent. So love that. And there's also some spectacular music references in American Psycho. I'm a big fan of the band The Talking Heads, and they're brought up a couple of times, so I love that. There is a big moment with U2, which I don't like Bono, so could have lived without that, and that's probably why it's number three on my list and not number one. Could have gone without the Bono, could have gone without U2 altogether, but I really enjoyed this one. I love the unreliability of narration with Patrick Bateman. I love the writing style of the book itself. It is very, very vulgar. It is very triggering at times. If you know anything about the books that I enjoy reading, I enjoy gross books. I like bodily fluids. I like hearing and reading about harm, things like that, just gross stuff. This book was so gross at times where I had to put it down, which in recent memory, I cannot think of any other books that have made me do that. So keep that in mind if you pick this up. This is also one of the most banned books around the globe. In some countries, it is shrink-wrapped, so it cannot be opened. So that's how intense and graphic it is at times. So just be aware of that. This is a 5 out of 5 for me. All of these books that I've mentioned are 5 out of 5s, and I will read this again, and I will watch the movie again. And I love watching the movie because, wow, Christian Bale and Chloe Sevigny, hello, yes. Give it to me.
I knew this was going to be on your list somewhere. I expected it to be pretty high up. I love that Bono was what knocked it down to the number
Bono
three spot.
And Brett.
Yeah, that's true.
Two B's.
Bono and Brett. You can't trust anyone with a B name. Just kidding.
My dad's name starts with B. Gotta trust Brian.
Oh, you're right. Brian is the sole B that we can trust.
Fair.
All right. Are you ready for my number two?
I'm so ready for it.
So speaking of a mezzy, this is the
I
death.
I knew it. I knew it. God damn it. I thought this was your number one. I was so ready to guess it.
It was super fucking close. It was super close. Like, this probably could be tied with my number one slot. So, I mean, all of my top five could be tied with the number one slot. Who am I kidding? I think maybe the reason it's not number one, I don't actually couldn't give a reason. Maybe just because it's been so long since I read it. It was one of the first books I read in 2021. So what a great mood or tone setter. And this is The Death of Vivek Oji. It was all over the place about a year ago. My heart, I sobbed so hard. Not that that means much. I think I cried reading every one of these books probably. But I like actually sobbed after this finished, just because it was like, not so much that it was a sad ending. It is a sad ending, but you know, when you finish a book and you hold it to your chest, and you're just like, I want to be absorbed by this book. I want to absorb it. I don't want to leave this world. That's how I felt when I finished it. So a little background. Amezi uses a doomed romance to explore a mystery. So a lot of, it's kind of funny, this falls under the crime fiction category, which is not what I picked up on while reading it. That was what I learned after reading it. And I was like, okay, I guess. But it slowly unravels also as a family drama. So there's a lot of different like genres that are mixing together to make a very complicated tale. And I think probably what the true goal of the novel, I know that that's hard to say, but it feels like love triumphs over everything, including death. Like, just because someone dies doesn't mean the love goes away. It still exists in the universe, and it is returned to the people who love them, and it goes on in their legacy. And it's a very beautiful message. You learn in the first page in the title that Vivek has died. So that's not a spoiler. Vivek is dead, and it's in the title. And they periodically like check in from the grave. And so you learn about their thoughts of the people who have survived them. And it's just, there are a lot of tension, a lot of complicated relationships. I'm trying not to give any spoilers, but if you've read it, you know, if you know, you know, and I would love to talk about it. I'm just obsessed with this novel. If I had to choose words to describe it, I would say haunting. Not just because there's a dead person in it, but just like, it has stuck with me. It's striking. It's beautifully written. It's just great. Everyone stop what you're doing. Go read it.
So you know how earlier I said that there's one book that I think is going to be the first book I read in 2022, and not to give it away. Well, this is it. I think this is going to be the first book that I read in 2022. I've been talking to Cynthia from Books with Sin on Instagram, and I think we're reading it together. I think it's it's both of our first time reading it, and I'm very excited to finally understand what you've been referencing for this whole fucking year, because wow, need to read.
I just hope you love it. I really do. I hope I haven't overhyped it for anyone.
I'm really confident that I'm going to like it. Everything that I've heard about it seems right up my alley. Also just seems like a very beautiful book as well. So
yeah, totally. All right. What is your number two? It better not be what I have written down as what I think your number one is, but go ahead. Okay.
So remember, I switched my number one and two earlier. And so my number two is Stoner by John Williams. Is this what you had? No?
It is what I had. So I'm going to cross that off my list.
Yeah, this is a book that I absolutely loved. And it's not just because I think that the version of it is one of the prettiest books that I own. I think the cover art of it is just gorgeous. And the publisher for it, I think it's NYC Press. I could be wrong about that. They just have beautiful editions of books. So that is influencing my decision a little bit, just because it's so nice to look at. But whatever. I like a pretty book, okay? This is a moment where you can judge the book by a cover, haha, because it's great. So Stoner is not about stoners, which I probably would still have enjoyed it if it was. It is about William Stoner, who is an academic living in the early 1900s in Missouri. He was born onto a small farm in the late 1890s, I believe. This is from memory. I really enjoyed this book, so I feel like it's stuck in my head a lot. And he went to Mizzou, which is the University of Missouri, to study agriculture, I believe, and new farming methods, but then discovered a love for studying English literature in his second year of college, and then completely changes his life, goes on to get a PhD and to begin teaching. And so this is a campus novel. This is an academic novel, but I would say that it's a very approachable one, probably because it was written in the 1960s, came out in 1965. So if you're looking for something that's like kind of dark academia, you know, takes place on a university campus in the distant past, you know, it's the 1900s, it goes through World War I and as well ends around World War II. So you get that nice time period in this like smaller university setting. Also, John Williams, the author, went to Mizzou and also taught at Mizzou, I believe. So he's very familiar with the campus, and he even has a note in the introduction saying like, excuse me if you notice that I've taken liberties with how Mizzou is laid out. I just wanted it to fit well for my story, which is just like, it's a sweet thing to have. But this book is not everything that is sweet. There's also some very depressing moments in it. As you can probably guess, as it's a campus novel, they're typically not the happiest. Usually academics are tortured in some sort of way in these types of books. And that is true for William Stoner as well. And so this goes throughout his entire life. And it's just a beautiful story. I want to read more books by John Williams, but honestly, I just also want to reread Stoner. And I don't know, just kind of live in that world for a little bit longer, even though it's not necessarily a happy world.
Is it fair to say that this was also the year of dark academia for you?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I feel like every year is kind of a dark academia year.
That's true.
But I just love early 1900s campus novels sort of thing. Yeah. Like this and like Morris, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, definitely. Those are the two books I thought you loved the most this year, but
I loved them so much.
Guess I was wrong.
And I can fully say I have no clue what your number one's going to be, because everything that I had as a possibility, you've already said. So I'm just going to go to your Goodreads really quick. Is it obvious? Should I know what it is?
I don't know, dude. I don't want to give you any hints. It's totally okay if you don't know what it is, because I agree. This is not what I thought was going to be my number one.
Is yours American Gods? Oh, god damn it. Okay. The Shining?
Nope. Would you like me to tell you?
Hamnet?
No.
No. Okay. Then I'm going to say those were my three guesses.
Okay.
And can you please tell me what your number one is?
My number one is, I think you would have guessed this, but I think maybe you forgot I read it this year. It is A Little Life.
Oh, fuck. Before we started recording, I was going through your list and I was like, oh, I forgot that you read A Little Life this year. Literally forgot that we just talked about that earlier. Oh my god, I understand why this is your number one. How could anything else compete?
It's this surprised me though. Remember when I finished it and I was like, I either hate this book or I love it. And then
It's one that just grows on you even more over time.
It's so true. I love it more now than I did when I finished it, which is insane to say, probably because I'm not as heartbroken. I've had time to heal from the trauma of reading it. So if you haven't heard of this book, trigger warning, I'm not going to get into the triggers. I'm not going to describe them. But if just saying the name, I feel like you need to know there's a trigger warning for literally everything under the sun. Most upsettingly, I think that comes to mind first. Childhood sexual abuse, prostitution of a minor, physical, just like an array of physical violence done onto all ages. Very upsetting. There's some graphic sexual assault scenes. I know I'm listening to all these triggers and you're going, Kendra, how can this be your favorite book of the year? That's because despite all of the darkness that exists in this book, when I think of it, I think of light, I think of love, I think of strength, healing, I think of the way friendship heals us and the grace it offers despite our darkest days. And I say darkest days specifically because the person who deals with all of that in their life thinks it's their fault, and it is absolutely not at all their fault. And so they think they need to earn the love from people around them. They don't deserve it. And despite that horrible existence to live, to think that like you don't deserve love, everyone deserves love. Love and forgiveness and understanding and just like unconditional acceptance is bestowed upon this person by their close-knit community. And that I could cry thinking about it. That is just the most meaningful thing in the entire fucking world. The surface level plot is that it follows a group of friends throughout like 40 years of their life. So you meet them in their early 20s when they're living through college. They're broke. They're so bonded. Well, one of them is not fucking broke, but most of them are broke. Oh, you're right. Two of them. Damn, I forgot. That's because that other one I had blocked through my mind. We have a whole episode about this if you want to get into spoilers without reading it. But I truly, if you're in the right mental state to do it, please read it.
There's also a spoiler-free section to our episode where you get into the spoiler or you get into the triggers that are really important to know before going into it. So if you haven't read A Little Life, we have our spoiler-free section at the beginning of that episode that gets into these triggers in a bit more detail too.
Totally agree. I also feel like we've both talked about this book a lot. Like, it's just a really good book. So I'll just say, again, if I had to choose words to describe it, devastating, absolutely devastating. I've never cried so hard and so often throughout a book. It's also dazzling. It's just so moving. The first time I cried reading it was happy tears, which I was like, maybe this is why everyone cries, because I'm just so happy for them. And then the joke was on me. It is excessive. I agree. That is why when I finished it, I thought maybe it was not for me at first, where I was like, do I give this a 1? Do I give this a 5? There's no in between. But the more I sit with it, the more I'm like, this excessive is still true, but maybe not gratuitous. I think a lot of people describe it as gratuitous, and I would describe it as stunning. I'm still stunned by it. I think it's a book I will reread one day. I'll probably skip sections because of how traumatic they are. I walked into a bookstore in the Tenderloin a few weeks ago, and this was their number one recommended pick. Not a trigger warning in sight. Not a trigger warning in sight. Don't like that.
Nope. I'm just going to shout out Green Apple Books really quick for this, because when I went in to buy this book, I got a used copy of it and I went up to the register to buy it. And the person working, they were like, okay, like, I'm really excited that you're reading this book. I love this book too. Just know that it's a lot and you might want to look up trigger warnings before going into it. And I was like, thank you for letting me know. Like, I've heard some things about it. I don't know anything going in except for there's a character named Jude and he's going to make me very, very sad. They're like, yep. That's very true. Again, if you need to look up trigger warnings or talk about trigger warnings, just like let us know and we can talk about it or send you resources. So Green Apple did the right thing there. That employee was on it, because no one should buy this book without knowing how troublesome and hard it is.
Totally agree. I will say that August did such a great job with me when she was just convincing me to read it, that she was just like, I really want you to read this, but I want you to know you need to be in the right frame of mind to read it. And so yeah. I followed August's example, and every time I recommend it, I go, you literally need to be in a very strong state of mind to read it, because if I was in like a depressive episode, this would have like fucking ended me. I would have probably never read again for sure.
Yeah. And this is such a beautiful book. You're so right. And there's also, I don't know if they're ever going to do a live stream of this again, but there is a live production of this that's set, I believe, in an Amsterdam theater company did it. I could be wrong about where it takes, where it was produced, but there's a 4-hour version of A Little Life that I was lucky enough to pay for a live stream to see. And oh, wow, so good. I want to reread the book now that I have like this in my mind for it. Also, the person that plays Jude St. Francis, I do not know his name and I feel bad about it because he is a stellar dude. I cannot even remember where he's from, but he's the poet laureate from wherever he's from. And he also just is really cool politically and everything too. So just want to shout that out, that someone good is playing Jude St. Francis.
Love that. We could talk about A Little Life forever, but I really, really want to know what your number one pick is.
Do you want to guess?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be wrong because...
I think it's pretty obvious.
Is it The Hour of the Star by Clarice? Is it?
Yes, is it, is. Yeah. Because this, okay, so my number one pick is The Hour of the Star by Clarice Lispector, which is a fantastic novella. I have it right here next to me. It's also translated and introduced by a super stellar guy named Benjamin Moser, who has done a number of her translations and introductions. I actually, just from the library, this is one of the main reasons why it's number one for me. I just checked out 5 other books by Clarice Lispector from the library, and I want to read all of them as soon as possible. I think I'm going to start, I can't see it, it's too far away, but it's her first book. I think it's Wild is the Heart or something like that. I should know. I have them all over there. Then I want to read like The Chandelier. So I'm just in a Clarice Lispector mood. I knew that I loved her before jumping into this because I had read some of her short stories before. So my first time reading the novella this year, all of the books that I have listed out, as well as what Kendra has listed out, it's our first time reading them this year. The next book I'm reading for her, Kendra looked up for me, is Near to the Wild Heart. I am so excited to read that one as well. Apparently, after that book came out, people in Brazil, which is where Clarice Lispector is from, started calling her Hurricane Clarice. So love that, because she wrote it when she was like 23 or something like that. Yeah, an immense talent. Absolutely love her. But to get to The Hour of the Star, this is a really, I'm like holding the novella because I love it so much. It's like not even 100 pages. You can read this really quickly. I made Kendra read it this year and she did not like it, and that's okay. But The Hour of the Star is a beautiful, wonderful novella. So for some background information on The Hour of the Star, this super short novella opens with the narrator introducing himself. His name is Rodrigo SM, and he is just talking about what it means to author a story, which is something that I love. I love it when the narrator is also the author and that just like interjects into the text. I love that disruption. And if you love it too and you haven't read Clarice Lispector, would highly recommend, but also would recommend Julio Cortazar, his story Continuity of Parks. Highly recommend, very similar vibes, love them. For sure want to be reading more Julio Cortazar this upcoming year as well. I've also heard his name pronounced Cortaza. I'm sorry if I mispronounced it. But so Rodrigo SM is talking about authorship and then introduces his own story, which follows the life of Macabea, who is a 19-year-old girl living in the slums of Rio. She is having a very difficult life, but she's also incredibly naive and is not necessarily aware of the hardships that she is facing as hardships. They are so normalized to her that that's just her everyday life, which I think is an important thing to consider when reading stories about people like Macabea. And so it gets into Macabea's lived experience, her relationship with others, as well as her relationship to herself. And I think it's just a very powerful and strange story. The fact that I feel like I was taken on such an emotional journey in such a short amount of time really impacted me. And it just made me want to read everything by Clarice Lispector. I'm going to, I've already bought her short story collection, got that used. I know I have her, I believe it's called, oh God, how do I not remember any of her titles? I know I got one of her story collections for Christmas this year from somebody. So for sure going to be reading that, as well as all the books that I have checked out from the library on her, or by her. So I just really love Clarice Lispector, and that's why this is number one this year. I just want to be fully embraced by Hurricane Clarice. So
King Clarice, what an iconic,
yeah,
like, name for someone. Wow,
so cool. I love her so much, and there is no other way that this couldn't have been number one. I don't know why I originally put Stoner as my number one option. Both of those books are ones that I love so much, but I do just love Clarice Lispector. And I would also say that Benjamin Moser, being a cool dude, impacted this as well. Him working on this, there's a really famous biography on Susan Sontag that he contributed to, as well as all his work with Clarice Lispector's works. So
amazing. I'm not shocked, but also, like, I knew it was going to show up somewhere in your top five, but I don't know. I still was like, Maurice for sure. Morris, sorry. Who's Maurice?
Who is he? I don't know.
Wow. How do you feel about your ranking? Are there any ones that you regret?
No, none that I regret, but some that I'm like, fuck, I wish we could have included that.
Yeah.
Are there any other books that come to mind that you would have included as honorable mentions?
Yeah, Say Nothing by Patrick Radin O'Keefe. I read this very early in the year, still one of my favorite nonfictions of all time, but it just, you know, when you're just like, if I had to compare it against the other ones, it like just barely doesn't come, I don't know. It was hard. It was super hard. How about for you?
It was really, really hard. I'm going through my Goodreads and Storygraph right now. I'm going to say, just because the day that we're recording this, today is December 23rd. It's the day that sadly Joan Didion passed away. And this last year I read The Year of Magical Thinking as well as the White Album. I would say The Year of Magical Thinking, I think it'd be interesting to read that with her death in mind.
Yeah, definitely.
Out there. Could have included Hamnet as an honorable mention for sure. We both loved that one.
I agree.
But yeah, nothing really else. On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous.
Oh,
the only reason I didn't include that is because I want to reread it and then have a firmer grasp because I listened to it. So that's
the
reason why it's not on here. I read Brokeback Mountain this year and Educated.
Mm-hmm.
So those could have been honorable mentions. Okay, well, yeah, those are our top picks for this year. I'm sure we'll be thinking of other ones. I'm sure both of us are already starting to think of some titles where we're just like, fuck, why didn't we include that? But you know what? It is what it is. We've already recorded this. There's no going back, baby. So those are our top picks for 2021. We would love to hear if you had any similar picks or any books that you read that you just absolutely love that you would like for us to read. You can let us know about those by messaging us on Instagram. You can find the podcast at Book Dump Podcast, and you can also find us individually. So you can find me, August, at Iggy Poop.
And you can find me, Kendra, at Kendra Lap. And wherever you're listening, please follow, subscribe, rate, review. So on Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe and leave us a written review, which would be super, super helpful. It helps other people find our podcast. You also now can leave us a review on Spotify, a brand new feature. You might need to update your app to access it, but whenever you can, please do leave us a review on Spotify. That will help others find our podcast as well.
Okay, well, thank you so much for listening. Again, reach out, share your picks with us, and we hope that you're having a great day.
Bye.